Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Sox. Members FDIC.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
That ball hit deep, way back! Deep to the field!
Holy cow! Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead!
Jimenez leaves the ballpark!
You can't put it on the ball!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
That's hit well by Moncada. To play here.
Oh yeah, Yoan Moncada with a three-run homer off Cole Hamels here at spring training, and organist Nancy Faust playing her trademark "Na Na Hey Hey Kiss Him Goodbye" right on cue. Oh, it was great to have Nancy back for the Sox Cubs game, and great to have Chris Kamka back on the White Sox Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Chuck, for having me in here. Random people you find here in Arizona. Let's sit down and do a podcast.
Yeah, I know. Well, our main topic today is about Yoan Moncada. I mean, could this be a breakout season for him? I mean, he had some serious growing pains, as we all know, last year in his first full season in the big leagues. Spent a lot of time working on his hitting this winter, and so far in spring, we're seeing some great results.
Well, listen. You're not a first overall ranked prospect for no reason, right? So, Moncada has the look, he has the swagger, he's got the swing, he's looking good.
Yeah.
And I think it's definitely possible to see a breakout season this year.
Well, he's batting so far in spring, .355, .477, .677, two homers, two doubles, a triple in 12 games.
Whoa, and then, hold on, how about it?
Oh yeah, what do you got?
7 walks to 11 strikeouts. That's the ratio you want to see.
It's a lot of strikeouts.
Well, they're always going to be there, okay? Yeah. So I think we got to come to terms with the fact that strikeouts are here. But the walk to strikeout, I like it. I like it. I mean, the patience is probably one of the premium things about his game because it's something that the rest of the White Sox roster lacks so much. And that's going to be one of the defining characteristics of his game. Patience. To go along with power. All the tools are on display.
And at the right, from the right side. Right. So last year... Mm-hmm. / 209, 287, 297. And there was all sorts of talk about, hey, should he even be a switch hitter? Oh, yeah. You got something.
Yes, he did. But over the last 43 plate appearances, he was 13 for 39, which is .333, with a .395 on base. So the end of that season, I mean, he was good anywhere. But from the end of the season, maybe the last month or so, I think this goes a little back into August.
Yeah.
He started to turn around, and he was definitely there.
He made an adjustment with his hands. I think that freed him up a little bit more. And here in spring, batting right-handed, 5 for 7 with 3 extra base hits and a home run off Hamels, which we played. Watch, here in 2019, he'll bat better from the right side than the left. Can you imagine that happening?
Well, I mean, during that sample that I told you about, he did hit better from the right than the left.
Well, here on the podcast, I spoke today with Yonder Alonso about Moncada. I spoke to hitting coach Todd Steverson about him as well. And here's Jose Abreu. So I went through White Sox translator Billy Russo to get some quotes from Abreu about him. So their lockers are right next to each other in Chicago, here in Glendale as well. And here's some stuff from Abreu. Quote, talking about Moncada. He decided to be better this year. He decided to improve. He's doing the things that he's supposed to be doing. He's eager to be a better player this year and hungrier than last year. And then he added, He knows what he's capable of doing, and he wants to show people that. He wants to show what he can do to help this team win games and win championships.
I mean, look at it. Their lockers are right next to each other. They're both from Cuba. In fact, look where Moncada's from.
Come on. Yeah. I didn't notice that.
He's from Abreu's Cuba. I mean, you can't make this up. And he has the same birthday as Frank Thomas. Wait,
when did you know he was from Abreu's? Have you always known that?
I had that stashed and ready to go before the trade was even made.
I haven't seen that before.
Oh, yeah.
Where have I been?
I got a keen eye for detail.
He is from Abreu's Cuba.
Yeah.
He was meant to follow Jose Abreu.
Without question. I think you're going to see Abreu following him in the lineup. And they could do some damage this year.
Ooh, so I was going to follow up on that. Yeah. Where do you think Moncada should bat?
I think he should hit two. And I think right now with the guys that are on the roster, I think John Jay is probably your best shot at the leadoff spot.
I agree.
So then I think Moncada has to be two, so you can get some base runners for Bray and get some RBIs. That's what I would like to see. I want to see some dynamic. I want to see a lot of on-base clustered at the top of the lineup. Give the bashers guys to bash in.
Here's what Abreu said about Moncada batting right-handed. Quote, about him, how he's doing so far in spring batting right-handed. Quote, I'm not surprised about that. I know all the talent that he has and all the things that he can do. People can be surprised about that, but I'm not because I know him and I believe in him. I'm here to help him. He's my boy.
Oh, all right. So let me compound on what I'm saying. Not only would I like him to see him hit second right now, okay? Just right now.
Yeah.
If he breaks out the way I envision he could, I would put him right back in the leadoff spot. I think he has the ideal leadoff qualities, right? Gets on base a ton. Has a little power. When you get up 1-0, that's what you want. Teams that score first win most often. I'd like to see Moncada develop into that leadoff threat that I think he can be.
But you don't want him driving in more runs?
Well, I think that ideally you have the guys in the lineup after him. Okay? So once we're...
If your lineup is stacked...
Right, so we're going to have Jimenez in here. Yeah. We're going to have a few other power bats coming in there. So by the time that it's all said and done and he's mature and ready to go, we're going to have enough guys in the lineup where you don't mind putting a power bat leadoff because it gives you a chance to go up 1-0, which I think is underrated. And second of all, it's an on-base guy that other guys can drive in. It works both ways.
All right, here's Yonder Alonso talking about Yoan Moncada.
What have you seen from Moncada so far in spring?
I see a guy who's focused. I see a guy who's, putting in his work, making sure he's doing all his extra stuff that he needs to do, especially on the defensive side. A guy who's been taking pride in his work, so it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, when you knew a little bit about him.
Yeah.
Are you learning more about him now that you've been here?
Yeah, I mean, incredible athlete. Just a freak of nature. But, I think it goes a farther way when we say, you look at a guy on an everyday basis now and you really understand how much he cares and how much he wants to get better and how much he wants to, kind of show everybody that he belongs and that, he's a guy that is here to, be a problem for the opposing team. So, excited what he brings to the table, obviously from the offensive side, but he does a lot of good things as well, not only from base running to obviously the catching ground balls and things like that, but just a good teammate all around, a guy who comes and plays hard, a guy who's prepared, and can't wait to see him throughout the whole year.
This game is so much about failure. He struck out over 200 times, but yet he wanted to take it upon himself to really turn his career around.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing a guy also who's getting smarter, who's studying his flaws, understanding what people are trying to do to him. And I think, obviously, not only with Pito here and the rest of the clan, I think we're going to help him out a lot. And just kind of seeing on the everyday basis how to go about your business and how to, have the same routine every single day. So it's a lot of fun to watch. And I think definitely high expectations, not only for himself, but he knows he can do it.
All right, so Chris, what do you think about what Alonso just said?
I like it. I think that's the way it's going to go. I mean, there's things that he needs to work on. He's going to work on those. Maybe a little too passive, but he's finding out, he's still figuring out the major league strike zone. And I think that's big. I mean, things differ from the minor leagues to the major leagues. He's still very young in his major league career. He's got adjustments to make. I think he's going to make them. And like I've said before, I'd rather have a guy that's too passive the guy swings and misses too much, just wildly.
Yeah, he's, to answer the first off, to answer the question, which is, do you think Moncada is going to have a breakout season? I think he will too. He spent so much time in this offseason, and obviously it's just work. He needs to do the results. We're seeing it here so far in spring, and like Alonso said, you know, he's getting smarter. He's studying his flaws. He's understanding what pitchers are trying to do to him. When you figure that out, that's when you improve. When you don't know what they're trying to do, you strike out 217 times like Moncada did last season.
Well, yeah. I mean, the tools are there. You see them. Now, once that's defined, you move forward and try to figure out what how to make yourself better. But he has the talent to do it. You see it's on display. You know, he looks good. I think it's going to happen.
We're going to hear some of your Moncada stats that you like. Give me one for now, and we'll get to a few later on.
Okay, so he had over 65 walks, and he had more than 15 home runs. And it was his age 23 season in 2018. Well, how many White Sox players age 23 season or younger have had 65 walks, 15 homers? The answer is three.
Oh, Frank Thomas?
Frank Thomas and Robin Ventura the same year, 1991, both in their age 23 season. Those are the only other two guys to do it in White Sox history. So it's pretty rarefied air in terms of this franchise, which has been around for quite a while, as some of you may know. So, you know, take a look at what he's done. Don't discount that.
Yeah. Let's hear now from Todd Severson, hitting coach. We got into the nitty-gritty of what Moncada is trying to do, talking about switch hitting, and he even says he thinks he has a better approach and thought process from the left side of the plate. So here is my conversation with Todd Severson.
All right, we're here in spring training. Your thoughts so far on what you've seen from Yoan Moncada at the plate, Trick?
Things have been good. Specifically, really, I like the way he's flipping around left and right sides. Right side's coming along real good up to this point. And I know he knows in his heart of hearts he can hit really well right-handed, just as well right-handed as left-handed. And I put a lot of work into that this offseason, along with going back and not really refining. I wouldn't say refining his left-handed stroke, just getting a different thought process about how to take the approach and things like that. And so far, so good.
When you see pitchers pitching him in spring, are you seeing them reacting to Moncada, or is Moncada just kind of seeing pitches and doing what comes naturally for him?
I'm worried about a pitcher. I'm worried about the baseball. You know, it's about where's the baseball on the plate? Is it a strike? Is it something I could do damage to, impact the baseball? Got nothing to do with who's out there. I mean, you throw it over to 17 inches, right about where I'm looking, we want to put a good pass on it.
No, I mean, sometimes the pitchers aren't really trying to get that specific hitter out. They're just working on their stuff. And I mean, so sometimes when you look at this.
That sounds good, but nobody wants to go out there and get beat up, you know. And no hitter specifically wants to go in there and do bad at the plate. We're all competitors, so I understand. Yeah, okay, I'm gonna work on inside fastballs today. If it's not going down, maybe they go back and they still need to get out of the inning some way, somehow, you know. So I think the competition is competition, but yeah, guys do work on it. So do hitters, you know. Sometimes hitters may take till two strikes. This is just working on a two strike approach, let me see if I can square one up 0-0 or something like that, or I'm sitting on a breaking ball. There's a lot of things that go on during the course of spring training that are unbeknownst to the average fan that is going on up there. You know, all you see is an at bat, but he was actually working on something specific, you know, that would carry over to the season. That goes on with all of them, matter of fact. It's just not specified what each one of them are doing when they get up there.
You've been working a lot with Moncada. How much does he want to improve and be the hitter that a lot of people think he can be?
I mean, I'm not sure you could put a scale of 1 to 10 number on or nothing like that, but obviously he wasn't happy with his output last year. We've had conversations about it. We've done work about it. At the end of the day, when he brings it into his mind of how this all comes together for him, he can make those strides going forward. You give him the information, you let him see who they were video-wise, things like that, and then it's time for that person to kind of start to get within themselves and say, okay, we're going to make some adjustments. I know you're helping me along the way make the adjustments, but I've always been a fan. You got to be a part of your own rescue, too. You got to understand what you're doing to yourself or how you're helping yourself get better. Because at the end of the day, I want you to be your best coach. You know, I want you to be able to teach yourself. And through experience, through time, I mean, the kid's 23 years old. Through the experience of the at-bats that he got from a couple years ago, the half season, and last year, he's gaining experience. He's gaining thought process. He's gaining knowledge. And through knowledge you can only get wiser.
Do you think he's knowing the strike zone better this year so far? Obviously, we're very early compared to last year.
I thought he knew the strike zone well last year. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, almost too well. That's a funky thing to say, almost too well. But, you know, when you can say that's a lace off the plate, you know, basically, and be right, that's knowing the strike zone.
Does he need to change his approach just because he knows it almost too well, like you said?
No, I mean, you don't want guys just going up there flailing, okay? Because then it becomes another issue. And, you know, it's easy to say, hey, you know, well, why don't you go for that one that they're calling two balls, three balls off the plate? Well, I'm not going to do it 0-0. I'm not going to do it 0-1. I'm not going to do it 1-0. Okay. Now, if you're talking two strikes, and I know you've been calling balls out there, and I'm cognizant of that as a hitter, yeah, I might have to fight that off. Now, there's only so far I can go before my mind says no. His mind only goes so far off the plate right now, and it's the expansion of that, knowing what's going on between that's been happening throughout the course of the game, that can only help. It's like, all right, my mind can only go so far off the plate, but you've been calling it further than my mind goes. That's the breaking point. You know, that's the one that gets kind of funky, whether it be out or in. Doesn't matter, out or in. Each hitter has this breaking point where I can't go for that no more. I just can't reach it. So that's the transition on that level. But it's game based. You know, the same pitch that gets called a strike that day might be called a ball the next day. So you know, you don't want to get yourself out of sorts. At the end of the day, you want to hammer the ball that's over the plate before you got to two strikes. But
you guys want him to be a little more aggressive early in counts to avoid that, right?
I avoid. I mean, you get a good pitch to hit, you want to hammer it. that's at the end of the day, yeah. But truth be told, every major league hitter is probably going to get into a two strike count over 40% of the time. Everybody, close to 36 to 40-something percent of the time. Now, how you got there is the question. And I think sometimes you deal on that level a little more than you deal on, he's always in two strikes. It's how'd you get there? Not, oh, man, he always seemed like he's 0-2, you know? And that's what we work on with that level.
As a hitting coach, I don't know how you even can fix this, but Moncada got called for so many strike threes last year, more than almost anybody in the game. How do you analyze that and try to prevent that from happening going forward?
That's a mindset. I don't know the specific numbers, but I know he was in the tops in the league of those called strikes being balls, a lot of them being balls by whatever system they use. Obviously, are what the umpire calls, so they end up being strikes. So, but you know, if you go on like, hey, that was probably a ball or whatever, I don't know how many numbers of it was. You cut some of them down just on general principle there, and then you go on, you know, the mindset of why did you take the other ones and so on and so on. And it's you know, you can't be fearful of the plate. I don't want him to be fearful of the plate by no means. I don't want to go up there not trying to strike out. That's the worst at bat you could ever have. So you go up there and put your approach on display. If you happen to get in two strikes, that's another approach. So you go on about your business on that level. Sometimes you make contact, sometimes you strike out, sometimes, you know, and it's just part of the game.
Again, early, we're only in spring, but do you foresee a comeback, not even a comeback season, a breakthrough season for Moncada?
I don't put ceilings on anybody. I mean, it depends on what you talk about, breakthroughs and stuff like that. Do I expect this season to be better? Absolutely. I don't put a ceiling on that. It's going to be what it is, but I think it'll be didn't think he had that terrible of a season last year. I mean, all people ever talk about is amount of strikeouts. Everything nobody ever talked about how, that the boy, as a full-time rookie, hit 17 homers, scored 70-plus runs, and still 60 ribbies and double-digit stolen bases. All everybody want to talk about is the fact that he struck out. That's part of the game. How about what he did well? Sometimes people gotta start turning around and look at what the man did well, too. So,
but don't you feel like he needs to cut down those strikeouts, though?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If anybody can sit here and defy specifically the type of player you think he's going to be, then yeah, it'd be nice not to have as many as he had last year, because that only goes into the pool of what he did well. And that's where we're at with that level. But in general, don't just look at what happened as a negative. Look at what he was as a positive player also. That's all I'm saying.
All right, Chris Trick, as they call him, said let's focus on some of the positives. What kind of positives do you have?
Well, I've mentioned the walks, okay? I mentioned a little bit of power. So let's take the walks and power and add an element of speed to it, right? So he had double digits in both home runs and steals, plus he had over 60 walks. So three players in the majors, 23 or younger, did that in 2018. Just three. Moncada, Cody Bellinger, Andrew Benintendi. Just three. And those are pretty decent players, right? So if you go back in White Sox history, 10 double digits, home run, steals, plus 60 walks, age 23 or younger, how many White Sox have done it? The answer is two. Moncada in 2018, Carlos May in 1970. Carlos May, for those of you who don't know, he was a White Sox player who was destined to be a superstar until he lost part of his thumb, in active duty.
Yeah. Was it Vietnam?
Military duty.
Yeah, he was not in Vietnam.
Yeah, it was military duty, and he lost part of his thumb, and it just never was quite the same power threat after that. But he had the tools to be a superstar. Many White Sox fans forget about how great Carlos May was.
Now, you're bringing up the age 23 season, and I think rightfully so, because
you have to.
You got to put it all in perspective that way.
Right, because he's still a really young player. And baseball's, there's a lot of nuance to the game of baseball. A lot of little details you're learning throughout your entire career. He's only 23. He has limited number of bats and games in the major leagues here. He's coming over from Cuba, and that's a big change as well. So I think, and you really need to look at the big picture, there's still plenty of room for growth. And you've seen some things that you can build on in 2018. Yeah, the strikeouts are there, but I think you lose track of the fact that it's a strikeout game now. Okay? There were three players with 200 strikeouts last season. How many players do you think had over 100 strikeouts in 2018, Chuck?
Over 100?
153.
Come on.
153 players had at least 100 strikeouts in 2018. 28 players had 150 strikeouts. That's an average of about one a team.
It used to be that if you went over 100 strikeouts, that was a big deal.
Well, look at this. Okay, so 2018, 153 players with 100 strikeouts. You go back 5 years, 2013, only 105. Go back to 2008, another 5 years back, 90. Another 5 years back, 60. So we're only looking at 15 years here. Only 15 years. 153 players had 100 strikeouts in 2018, 60 players had 100 strikeouts in 2003. I mean, that's exponential almost. Well, it's not, but it's
a massive, it's an incredible jump that's happened.
Jump in strikeouts. And that's just where the game is. People are pitching faster than ever. It's more of a all or nothing, home run or nothing approach, but the reason why they do that is because it's worth it. It's worth the payoff. A home run is a very valuable event in baseball. If you can hit a home run, you want to do it. So at the expense of a little batting average or a strikeout here and there, you do it.
And he gets a lot of doubles, too. And I think he's going to have even more next season.
He does. So over his last 32 games of 2018, he hit .303, .370 on base, .434 slugging. So he also led the team with 37 batted balls of 95 or more miles an hour over that span. He's hitting the ball hard. So you saw a great finish to a season that you might see as a disappointment. Most people probably do. He probably looks at it as a disappointment.
It was a disappointment.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
But you look at it and he finished strong. And I think you can't understate that. He finished strong. He did it against both sides of the plate. And I think that's the way you want to finish a season. If you're going to have a disappointment, finish strong.
He needs to change his two-strike approach for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And what Steverson said was, he needs to know what the umpire is calling that day. Okay, first at bat, you're not really going to know what the umpire is calling that day until that first at bat or second at bat happens. Towards the end of the game, you got to have a better idea. Okay, if this is close, I got to hit. I got to swing.
Okay, so put him in the two spot rather than leadoff. So you get one batter to gauge
one batter to figure it out.
It's better than nothing, right? So
yeah. And then Stevenson said you get into a two-strike count 36 to 40% of the time. What do you think about that stat, that number?
Well, I mean, struck out about 39% of the time last year, so yeah. It's right in line.
All right, we're going to talk about Carlos Rodon in a moment, but first, let's take a break here on the White Sox Talk podcast. We're back with more in a moment.
Ricky's boys don't quit, and neither does NBC Sports Chicago's coverage. Download the My Teams app by NBC Sports and get your White Sox anytime, anywhere.
All right, we're back here on the podcast. Chris Kampka here with me, and Carlos Rodon, big news. I mean, you saw it coming, but it's official now. He's been named the opening day starter March 28th in Kansas City. Again, you can see on NBC Sports Chicago. Your thoughts on Rodon getting the ball first?
Well, it's what you do. I mean, you go, if you have a veteran versus young players and it's kind of close, you go with the veteran for the opening day start. I think many people anticipated, I did too, I figured it would happen. It's a White Sox time honored tradition of starting a lefty on opening day. Look, since 2000, this will be number 20. 17 of those 20, including this season with Rodon, will be started by lefties on opening day. So you had Mike Soroka, David Wells start off, five seasons of Burley, four more seasons of Burley with Jose Contreras, the righty in the middle, Danks, Sale, Samardzija, another righty, Sale, Quintana, and James Shields last year. That's the rundown of all of them, only three of them righties. Contreras, Samardzija, and Shields. So we're back to the lefty on opening day, and that's fine. I think it's a big season for Rodon because he is still yet to produce a 30-start season for the White Sox. He's never had a fully healthy season, and I think that's important.
And he's healthy going into a season.
Healthy going into a season, and this is the first time we've had that. And so let's see what he's got because, yeah, the strikeout percentage went down this year. It went down a lot. I mean, I'm not going to lie. 22.9%, 23.5%, 25.6%, down to 17.6%. So how much of that could be attributed to injury issues, injury woes? I don't know.
He says it wasn't.
Okay.
But I think it was.
I don't think you're ever going to say, yeah, I was bad.
He wasn't hurt. He just wasn't all the way back.
See, I don't think anyone's going to admit, oh, yeah, I wasn't quite right because, you know, it was injuries. Nobody wants to be seen as making excuses for it. And it's not really an excuse either, but it kind of maybe is perceived that way. But you never want to say, oh yeah, it was bad because of this.
Right.
He wasn't even bad. If you look at the numbers, he's a tick above league average. And that's pretty much what he's been every year he's been here. But the strikeout rate, they can be there. He's done it in the past. If you could name every pitcher in White Sox history with 9 strikeouts per 9 innings and at least 20 starts in the season, I could do it even on two fingers.
Two fingers, okay.
Right. And if you can't figure out the other one, then you shouldn't be hosting this podcast. So that's it. And it's kind of rarefied air in White Sox history. So you can get the strikeouts, and even by the eyeball test, you can see that wipeout slider. That's a devastating pitch. When it's on, Nobody's hitting that. And last year in particular, he was really stingy with the hits overall. So that's nice to see. So you can see flashes of it. I mean, he had a stretch where in 9 starts from July 5th to August 27th, he had a 1.84 ERA.
And we were talking about him being an ace when he did that.
He held guys to a 509 OPS, 151 batting average over that span, 9 starts. That's like a third of his season. September, not so much. So, but I don't think he's ever had, could have worn down a little bit. I don't know what it is. But I like to look at the good right here and just let's see what he can do. Full season.
Yeah, and he said, by the way, this bird is really annoying me. He said that, he gave a great quote when I was talking to him earlier this spring training where he said, it's time to blank or get off the pot. And he's not just talking about this White Sox team. He's talking about himself. It's time for Carlos Rodon to be that first overall or first round pick for the White Sox drafted. It's been, 4 years, 5 years? It's time.
Yep. I mean, there it is, third overall pick. And but the birds are fans of the podcast.
Yeah.
Shout out to the birds.
Shout out to the birds. And the fly that keeps flying around us.
You know, winged creatures are fans of the podcast.
Is that a reptile of some sort?
Oh, another group of animals want to speak up because I mentioned the birds and the fly, so nobody wants to be left out. Everyone loves this podcast.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I want to be on the podcast.
And I work on the podcast.
Without question. And by the way, let me point out, well, back to Rodon's stats, because that's what we're here for. He was a little, he was rather unlucky with batted balls in play. 243 batting average on balls in play. So, I mean, that's something maybe to look at. Mm. And that's why he's so stingy with hits. So
there could be a bump there.
There's a lot there. There's a lot. But I think the overarching thing is I want to see a full healthy season of Carlos Rodon, because I've seen the ability to strike batters out. And that's probably the most important thing you can do as a pitcher these days.
Okay. Well, Chris, thanks for your time. Got anything else you want to empty the tank with here? On Makata or on Rodon?
I think I got it all in. Glad you've gotten it all in. Opening day third baseman.
That's a fun list. But that's also one thing we haven't even talked about is that I think, and I've heard Bill Melton say this, I heard actually Frank Thomas was here and he said this as well, that the fact that you are no longer in the middle infield, when you're in the middle infield, you have a lot on your mind with relays, steals, double plays. When you play third base, you can free your mind of so many things and just really, for the most part, focus on hitting. And I think that is going to help Moncada offensively. Because when I first heard that, I'm like, who cares? He's going to play a different position. How's that going to help him hit?
Well, here's the thing.
But people who've played the game say it does help you hit.
Think about this. So if you're at second base and you get the ball and you can kind of just flip it on over the first, right? You don't have to rush it over mostly. You don't have to rush the ball over there. If you're at third base, grab it and throw it. No, it's like a missing element of thinking, if that makes any sense, right?
Yeah.
You just got to get it and throw it right away. Your reaction, you do it. Sometimes a lot of the errors and misplays that Moncada made last year were kind of those ones that the play just lagged and it just kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was some of those plays that just
he should have
really
made.
Make a lackadaisical play or just kind of take your time too much because you could. He's not going to be afforded that now, and I think that might help him because he certainly has the arm to play third. So I'm interested to see what he's done, what he's going to do. I like what I've seen so far. There's been some nice throws.
Yeah.
So I think this could be good for him.
All right, you said you had a third base list or a third base something or other?
Chuck, so how many of the White Sox opening day third basemen since Joe Creedy, can you name?
Oh, man. Opening day third baseman?
Opening day third baseman since Joe Creedy. And I'll tell you how many there are. Three, four, five.
Way too many.
Seven of them.
Seven. All right, Todd Frazier, Josh Fields.
Yes.
Yolmer Sanchez.
Yes.
All right, I have to go by all these years here. 2009. Oh, my goodness. I've got a black hole of thought. Who are some of the third basemen that I'm forgetting here? Oh, man. Who else you got?
Connor Gillespie. A couple seasons of him.
Gillespie.
One season of Jeff Kepinger.
Oh.
Two seasons of Brent Morrell.
This is why I forgot all these
One
guys.
Season of Mark Tian.
Mark Tian.
So, hopefully, Moncada will be the stabilizer, third base, from here on out.
You know what, Chris? You got to do a column on this. You got to write about this.
I think I will.
This needs more than just a little... throw in at the end of a podcast.
Let's dig in. I'm always fascinated by opening day starters and the consistency from one year to the next.
Yeah.
You pick a position and you just kind of look at it. Like center field has been that way for a long time for the White Sox.
Don't bring that one up.
I won't. But third baseman, kind of the same deal since Joe Creedy. So look out for it. I think eventually I'm going to go ahead and break down since Joe Creedy, opening day third baseman in White Sox history. And hopefully Yohan Moncada will put you at ease with that.
All right, and that's going to be a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast, because a tractor is about to come over here, and we're going to stop him for the moment because you don't need to hear a tractor and birds at the same time. Chris Kampka, thank you so much.
Thanks, Archer.
Todd Severson and Jose Abreu and Yonder Alonso, and all of you for listening to the White Sox Talk podcast brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, your home for White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Go to the special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/Sox. Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, Art Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk Podcast is over.